Citizen Sounds, a diverse collection of sounds and stories from our researchers, educators, and students, sharing knowledge and insight to make a difference in Leicester and the world. We are Citizens of Change, University of Leicester. I'm Tari King, Professor of Public Engagement at the University of Leicester, and today I'm talking to Jackie Shaw, who is Professor of Translational Cancer, Head of the Department of Genetics and Genome Biology, and co-director of the Leicester Precision Medicine Institute, among other responsibilities. We'll be talking about Jackie's research projects, but first of all, Jackie, tell me about your background. I spotted that you did your undergraduate degree here, so what brought you to Leicester as an undergrad?
Hi, Tori. I did my degree in biological sciences between 1983 and 1986 here, and I was really inspired to come to Leicester based on an article in the Times Higher Ed, which was really advertising the sort of transformative curriculum that Leicester was promoting in biological sciences at the time. And what really grabbed my interest was an article about Professor Sir Alec Jeffries and the work that he was doing here. And I was just really inspired, and I knew from reading that that this was where I wanted to come and study. And I was lucky enough in my time here to do my undergrad project with Alec as well, which again, I believe is what launched my career and kept my sort of passion for science motivated and drove me forward into my career.
So what was your project with Alec?
So it wasn't on DNA fingerprinting, actually, but there were other projects in the lab at the time. And I was working on methylation. Again, this was early work, so very sort of labour-intensive type techniques. But it was really exciting to be in that lab at the time with the buzz that was going on around the development of DNA fingerprinting, but also to work on a separate project as well. So I had my own space.
So what is methylation then?
So methylation is a change which occurs in human DNA, which is involved in switching genes on and off. And this change can be inherited and passed down through the generations. So we can use this to look at the historical fingerprint of the cell, but also to look at differences between gene expression patterns in different cell types.
So after you did your undergraduate here, where did you go next? What was your research on?
So after my undergrad here, I wanted to work, so I took a post as a research assistant in London at Imperial College. But I knew my passion really was for human genetic research, human molecular genetic studies. So again, I was fortunate enough to join a really sort of multidisciplinary team there. And I was working on a neurodegenerative disease called Friedreich's ataxia. And we were looking for evidence of the Friedreich's ataxia gene locus through linkage studies in families affected by the disease.
So this is essentially looking at families who've got the disease running through, and then from that you try and find where the gene is.
That's right. So you're looking for an association between the inheritance of the disease and genetic markers. So it's called linkage analysis. And where there's a close association, you see that genetic marker being co-inherited with the trait. So using that approach, we were able to identify the chromosomal locus which contained the Friedreich's ataxia gene. And following on from my PhD, other members of the group were able to clone the gene as well. So it was nice to see that come to fruition.
So what brought you back to Leicester again?
So I was attracted back to take up a sort of a new lectureship position in the then Department of Pathology. So it was relatively earlier in my career. But again, I already knew that that was the job for me. So I was delighted to come back to the sort of Leicester family and join the then Department of Pathology, which over the years has been sort of absorbed into a larger first cancer department and now genetics and genome biology.
So what were you working on when you first started?
So when I came to Leicester, I had a change of direction. So I really wanted to focus on breast cancer research. Being female, it was really important to me that we as women work in a sort of disease area that's of importance to women. So I really just reshaped my sort of priorities and focused on breast cancer translational research.
Yeah, you're absolutely, true. I was looking at the statistics and things, and it's the most common cancer in the UK, the most common cancer for women, and hugely treatable if you catch it early enough. So I know that you've been working on what's known as cell-free DNA, and you were the first to publish describing the kind of molecular makeup of this. So what is cell-free DNA, how does it differ from the DNA that we normally think about that's in cells? And why is it interesting? What were you finding?
So cell-free DNA is DNA that's been released by dying cells into the bloodstream. So this can come from healthy normal cells as well as from cancer cells. So the idea is a little bit like in forensics, where every contact leaves a trace and you can identify perpetrators of a crime by trace evidence at a crime scene. So if you think of cancer as being the crime, that will leave a little bit of trace evidence. It's DNA circulating in the blood. And because cancer cells have a different genetic makeup, because they've acquired somatic genetic changes, that means changes to the DNA sequence that only occurs in the cancer cells, then we can use those as hallmarks and identify them through this cell-free DNA in the blood.
So when you started looking at cell-free DNA, was the idea to start by looking for evidence of cancer within that, or were you looking at something completely different and that was a side thing that came from it?
So this came from some work that we were doing where we were looking at sort of genetic changes over time in patients' cancer samples. So where we'd got a paired cancer plus their sort of later disease progression. And we noticed that there were genetic differences between the cancer early on in the development of the disease and later. And again, I wondered whether we might be able to track this through blood tests. So yes, we started looking for evidence of these cancer-specific genetic changes in the blood.
So I think that's quite interesting, because until I was reading about your work, I hadn't sort of really clocked this. You kind of think of tumors as being kind of slightly self-contained, but actually, as you say, they're kind of leaving traces in our bloodstream. So how do you pick that up? It must be incredibly sensitive technology to be able to pick up these little bits of DNA. Is it something where you sequence everything and then fish it out later, or are you targeting these particular bits of DNA to begin with, or...
So over time, the approaches we've used to analyze this have changed, particularly with the advent of high-depth next-gen sequencing technologies. But depending on the cancer type, we can really home in specifically on a single genetic change, or as you've suggested, we can look globally and look at the whole circulating cancer genome. We can do that at high depth with high sensitivity and specificity. But we really are looking for a needle in a haystack, because certainly in early-stage disease, the tumour-derived fractions of the DNA that's coming from cancer cells can be at less than 0.01%.
So that's interesting. So you can presumably track the levels of this through time, and that presumably is telling you something about how the cancer is progressing?
Exactly. So the levels of the DNA in the blood are a good biomarker of disease progression, but also response to treatment as well. This is a really sort of useful biomarker because it's very dynamic. It has a relatively short persistence time in the circulation. So when we identify those genetic changes, we know that that's DNA released from cancer cells which have died within the last few hours in that patient.
So this is like an amazing kind of surveillance system that you've got going, because presumably you can not only detect these DNA sequences and the changes and the mutations are occurring, the quantity is changing. Is this allowing you to look at things like being able to, you know, detect cancer at early stages? If you can do this kind of needle in a haystack, can you find evidence of cancer quite early on?
Yes, exactly. So we can look right through the sort of cancer journey. So we can look in more late stage disease and use this approach to tailor more appropriate treatments, even in the sort of palliative setting where perhaps treatments have been exhausted. The genetic changes can sometimes identify a new particular treatment that could be offered. But then when we come really early back in terms of screening and detection of cancer, again, this approach is beginning to show fruitful delivery in a number of clinical trials and studies that are ongoing around the world.
So I know you've been working on developing liquid biopsies for cancer. So what is a normal biopsy? And what's a liquid biopsy? And what can the liquid biopsies tell us? Can they tell us something different from the normal biopsy, or is it similar? How does it work?
So when a person has cancer identified, normally there would be diagnosis based on a tissue biopsy or surgically removed tissue, and that's carried out by pathology labs. The problem with that approach is that can be quite limited because it depends on what tissue has been removed at the time. So a biopsy sample can be quite small and might not represent the genetic makeup of the whole tumour. The liquid biopsy, however, is this sort of snapshot in space and time through a blood sample, but that can be more representative of the entire sort of cancer burden in the body, so can give you a better picture sometimes of the full genetic makeup of that cancer.
And you've alluded to this already, but if you're able to do this in individuals and get these snapshots through time and look at the differences that are going on, but also differences between individuals, it then lends itself to personalized medicine, presumably.
Absolutely. And the main advantage with these blood tests or liquid biopsy is that you can essentially take a repeat sample relatively regularly. So most patients will tolerate a sort of bi-monthly blood sample, which can be used to monitor how their disease is responding to treatment, whether they have evidence of active disease, or even as a reassurance, perhaps, that they've been cured and their disease has gone away.
This is clearly pretty revolutionary. I read that your team has shown that these blood tests can show when a cancer is coming back up to 2 years before scans. So this is really revolutionary kind of technology now.
Yes, so we and other groups actually have published evidence that shows that these blood tests can detect when the cancer's coming back up to 2 years ahead of imaging. And this is really revolutionary, as you say, because if this test were in routine clinical practice, 2 years is a long window of time where an appropriate therapy, perhaps an oral pill, could be offered, which might prevent the disease from progressing to metastatic cancer.
And absolutely crucial, because we all know that the earlier that a cancer is diagnosed, the better able you are to treat it and change the outcome, presumably.
Absolutely, but we still need to have proper clinical trials which give the firm evidence that this is the case, because we don't want to offer false hope. And equally, we don't want people to be worrying for longer about their disease if treatment isn't successful.
So I know that, and you've alluded to this already, so you've been working in breast cancer for years, and obviously most common cancer in the UK, you know, 15% of all new cancer cases are breast cancer. So do you want to tell me a little bit more about the work that you have been doing around that?
Yes, so one of the main studies that we've been working on since 2012 is in breast screening. So we've recruited over 3,000 women who've been identified as requiring further investigation after a mammogram. So there may be a shadow on the mammogram which requires further follow-up. So when those ladies come back to clinic, they consent to give us a blood sample, and then we can correlate genetic changes in the blood sample with their imaging from their repeat follow-up or any other investigations such as biopsy that occur. And in this way, we can look across an age-matched population, which includes, of course, healthy women with no evidence of cancer, and then these small early-stage breast cancers detected by mammography.
And you said that that's starting to wrap up now. So is it getting ready
to... Yes, so we've closed to recruitment. So we're continuing to follow up these ladies as their disease progresses if they've had breast cancer. But also we've got follow-up information on the healthy women who've had subsequent mammograms at their next screening appointment. So it's an extremely valuable resource, and we think it's a unique population worldwide. And we're characterising the genetic profile of the cancers in all of the women who've had cancer detected, and then we can personalise this approach and look for evidence of their cancer through blood tests.
So I know you're also looking at lung cancer. So again, one of the really common cancers, and one where the survival rate is much lower. So I know fewer than 20% of people survive 5 years beyond diagnosis, and it accounts for over 20% of all cancer deaths. So really serious. And I know you've been working on this TRACERx national trial. So what is it that you're looking at with that?
So again, we're extremely fortunate to be part of this national study in non-small cell lung cancer. And TRACERx is similar to our breast cancer work, where we're doing genomic analysis or looking at the DNA of the patient's cancer and using that evidence to personalise our assays looking in blood tests. Again, in the TRACERx study we published several years ago now, evidence that the liquid biopsy showed evidence of disease recurrence ahead of scans. Again, it was a 1 to 2 year window in that study.
So how's the COVID-19 pandemic impacted on your work then?
So the COVID-19 pandemic has obviously slowed some of the progress of our research because of the social distancing, because of access to reagents, etc. But however, it presents opportunities as well. And the types of molecular diagnostic tests that we use can be pivoted away from cancer to COVID testing. And indeed, that's what we did last year successfully when we set up a screening program for staff and students at the university. And on the back of this, we've also gained funding and a contract with the Department of Health and Social Care, where we're piloting a new COVID testing technology for them.
So what does the new test involve? Presumably looking for traces.
So this is using a technique called LAMP, which is, again, a molecular test, which has amplification of DNA, but at a single temperature. And the advantage of that is it's an extremely rapid test, but it's also portable. So it's the sort of test that doesn't necessarily require a lab and could go out into, you know, the community setting. But equally, because it's extremely rapid, if you do have a lab, you can set up a very high throughput workflow so that you can deliver many tests per day.
So you're also co-director of the Leicester Precision Medicine Institute. What's the overall aim of the Institute and what are people working on?
So the Precision Medicine Institute really brings together some of our key clinical strengths. And again, it relies on the sort of multidisciplinarity of the work that we do. So working across cardiovascular disease, respiratory disease, cancer, diabetes, we can really capitalize on the expertise of our clinicians and our fundamental scientists to use precision medicine approaches to sort of transform lives. So in each of those examples, using a more patient-focused approach where you personalize the treatment to the patient's genetic makeup, for example, can deliver sort of more successful outcomes going forward.
I think this is something which University of Leicester is really known for, isn't it? We've got this real kind of synergy between clinicians and researchers, which we're really, really lucky to have here.
I agree. I think we've got a really good working relationship with the local NHS Trust, but also increasingly with the primary care setting as well through Leicester Academic Health Partners. And again, we're sort of perfectly synergistically co-located within half a mile of each other. So again, that makes collaboration extremely easy.
One of the things about the research that you do is not only is it something that translates within the NHS, but it also has commercial possibilities as well, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And again, I think there's increasingly a realization that working with companies is a sensible way forward, essentially, because we can, again, capitalize on the synergies and the different strengths between the commercial partners and the university, more fundamental scientists and clinicians. So over the years, I've increasingly worked with different companies to sort of crash test their new products, to work with them to develop new technologies, and then to apply them to our research setting. And more recently, we've set up a spin-out lab from my lab called Leicester Molecular Diagnostics. Again, that sits between the university and the hospital trust. And we've secured quality assurance accreditation to ISO 15189. And that is now a platform where we can start to pull in commercial projects, et cetera, and run those through that facility.
So what's next for you? You have a lot on. What's next?
So what's next for me is successful completion of my current breast cancer studies. And as part of that, I'm about to apply for quinquennial renewal of my programme funding from Cancer Research UK. So if I'm able to secure that, that will essentially allow us to take the research forward for the next 5 years. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the point where these blood tests are becoming more mainstream in clinical practice.
Jackie, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. We're definitely going to need to catch up with you as your research projects progress.
Thank you, Tara. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Citizen Sounds, University of Leicester. Visit le.ac.uk.